into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Right, it's exciting. The Premier League is back and the Paddy Power Half Hour is here with you every Friday afternoon, bang on 1:30. We're a minute late this week, but don't worry, we'll be on time next week and we're going to try and make some money for you. Enda Call is here calling it as he sees it and hopefully giving us some of the hottest of hot takes. And also with us is Emmett O'Keefe. He's the pointy-headed odds compiler from Paddy Power, putting the numbers where the money is. Emmett, how are you?
Not too bad. Looking forward to the end of international football, I guess.
Ah, no. Not looking forward to the end of it fully.
Not fully, but I think it's... yeah, we'll leave the questions whether it's viable in the current times, but I think just certainly the quality of football, especially from Ireland, hasn't been great. So
what are you talking about? The best quality football we've ever seen from Ireland in the last number of years. Okay, so scoring is important, yeah. But like, who doesn't like a bit of tantra in their lives, Emmett?
Yes, that's fair, Ger. That's fair.
Right, listen, we're going to start with who's the next manager being sacked, because there has been the glory of the distraction of international football for the last 10 days, and in the meantime, nothing has actually changed. Like, all the pressure that the various managers are on. Andy, we ran a poll. What do our users think?
It's a poll on Twitter. If you want to get involved, it's still going on for the next half an hour. But it's been neck and neck pretty much between Scotty Parker for Fulham, Solskjaer, and people weren't really going for my Sean Dyche addition to the poll. You know, I think it got about 4% in the last hour or so. So it's very much Solskjaer is the current favourite on our poll. 47% of the people who voted in think that he's going to be the next manager sacked. And then around about 44, I think it's Scott Parker. So the fact that the worst defence in the league so far and Scotty Parker's reign to his Fulham career in the Premier League has not got off to the best start, people still think Solskjaer is the first manager to be sacked here.
Yeah, I kind of agree with this, but then it's hard to know if it's such an embarrassment for Ed Woodward and for the owners to sack him. What's the money saying, Emmett? What are the actual odds on this at the minute?
Yeah, so Solskjaer is currently the favourite at 2-1, Scott Parker 3-1, Slaven Bilic 7-2, and Sean Dyche 5-1. Sean Dyche would have been the biggest mover in the market as well. He's come in from 16-1 at the start of the international break into 5-1. I think that's a reflection of A, the him being linked to the England job, and B, that I think there seems to be an unhappiness on his part at Burnley's lack of summer transfer business. I think their only major signing, well, if you can call it major, it was Dale Stevens for about £1 million. And given the kind of the brilliant job and with unlimited resources Dyche has done, you can understand how frustrated he'd be with that.
Yeah, that's actually hilarious, Jared, because I was looking at this. I'm going to take the Burnley game. I think I drew the short straws in the terms of what games I'm going to be covering this week in Paddy Power Half Hour. But the Burnley game, Sean Dyche has been slashed to 5-1 to be the next England manager because Gareth Southgate lost 1-0 to Denmark. If anything, if you look at this England side at the minute, it has some unbelievably creative players in the likes of Rashford, Jack Grealish finally getting a step up, Mason Mount to a lesser extent, I think he's completely overrated. But Sean Dyche, putting those players in the hands of Sean Dyche is laughable. It's hilarious. It's like when Sam Allardyce got the job for 3.5 seconds, It's that. They're putting the next golden era of English football in the hands of a player, of a manager who wants to play British football, and it's funny to watch.
We don't know that he wants to play British football. He just had to do that with Burnley.
We do.
If I played in Burnley, I would probably play British football to make sure that I was getting out of there alive. Right. So that's the next manager sacked. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What are those odds again, Emmett? Sorry, slowly.
Yeah. So 2-1 Solskjaer.
2-1. He's the favourite.
Yeah, and then 3-1 Parker, 7-2 Slaven Bilic, and 5-1 Sean Dyche.
Yeah, look, I think they spent a little bit of money at Fulham. They understand that they're no good. That's the fundamental. He's not doing anything that you wouldn't expect him to do at this point. They're struggling because they've just come up. They spent that little bit of money at the very end. I think they're going to give him a little while, but I think the pressure is definitely on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And we'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes' time. So the games, well, let's get into this, right? We're going to go, we're going to start with the big game of the weekend. It is Everton against Liverpool. It's tomorrow. It's an early kickoff, 12:30. Everton's record against Liverpool, we can start the clock here, we've got 4 minutes to talk about.
Can we not knock it?
Whoa, that was a bit of a surprise. I must see if my ears still work.
Well, you're wasting 10 seconds there, Ger.
Right, Everton's record against Liverpool is absolutely abysmal. They found a million different ways to lose to this Liverpool team over the last number of years. Are they going to do it again, Enda?
Well, this is actually amazing, because the last time Everton beat Liverpool in the Merseyside Derby, 17th of October 2010, Mikel Arteta and Tim Cahill scored winners in that, Ger. And I think it's going to be closer than it's been in the last couple of years. Everton have really bottled
10
it.
10 years since they last beat them in a Merseyside Derby.
It's insane.
Exactly. They're,
like, people always talk about how the Merseyside Derby is so close. And it's close in the sense of there's draws in it in Goodison Park. But apart from that, if you ask Sam Allardyce, the last time Everton won it was when they drew 1-1, the time Calvert-Lewin ran into... I think it was Dejan Lovren in the box, won a penalty and they drew 1-1. Sam Allardyce came out after it saying they basically won the game. But this game, I think they genuinely do have a chance. Calvert-Lewin, the aforementioned, is in unbelievable form, Jer.
Emmett, the odds on this one?
Yeah, so Everton are currently 3-1, the draw 11-4, and Liverpool 10-11. I think while Everton haven't had the hardest fixtures, I think their advanced numbers are pretty eye-opening. They've the second highest expected goals for in the league, and even more impressively, the lowest expected goals conceded in the league. Only through a few matches, so take those statistics with a pinch of salt. But I think it is reflective of how good they have been, and that their price to win the Premier League has shortened from 500-1 before the season to 16-1 as we speak today.
16-1 is still, I think, too short for them. I'm not getting on board the Everton train until it's like a week left to go and they've got a 5-point lead. To win the league. Certainly, people are starting to talk about them as a legitimate contender for the top four. Is it not just that we see this, and we've seen this throughout history, where a few new signings come in, they start really well, and then, slowly, the analysts get hold of exactly where Gylfi Sigurdsson is working, where James Rodriguez is working, you mark them properly, you mark up at corners and free kicks, and all of a sudden, they start drawing games that they were winning, and then they start losing games that they were drawing.
All it'll take is an injury to James Rodriguez for it to sort of fall off a cliff, and Calvert-Lewin as well. Calvert-Lewin's an interesting one, Jared, though, because obviously Carlo Ancelotti, everyone's talking about how he said that he wants to turn him into Inzaghi. But I think it's quite interesting because Pep Guardiola did this with Sterling a couple of years ago, where he realised that he was bad at finishing, realised that he wasn't good at one-on-ones, and just got him to be in the right position at the right time. And that is where Sterling thrived. He got like 22 goals that year. I think Calvert-Lewin's pretty similar. He knows that Calvert-Lewin isn't the most prolific striker in the world, but if you get him in the right place at the right time, he will finish that ball. So I think he's going to key for him. If he gets injured, that's a major issue. But Everton are case in point in where United are going wrong.
We'll talk about United in a minute. But so bear in mind, this is a Liverpool team who were beaten by Villa the last time they played. They conceded 7 goals. If you've all forgotten that, it actually really happened. You can't men in black it. The same goalkeeper is going to be in goals for Liverpool this week.
You have no confidence in Adrian.
They don't. And the rest of the defence all of a sudden seems to stutter, which is why I think 3-1 is quite a big price about Everton at home in this game against Liverpool. I just think that might be one of the bets of the weekend.
I think Richarlison's a good shout for goal scorer in this, Jer, because down that right-hand side where Joe Gomez and Trent have been playing, that's where teams are damaging them, and that is where everything.
I'm on Richarlison for top goal scorer at 80-1 on a Nathan Murphy recommendation, he just picked the wrong Everton striker. So right, Everton are about 3-1. The draw's about 3-1. Is the draw about? Am I right about that?
Yeah, exactly.
And as for your little program on the telly where you're counting down, just go and get a job, innit? Get a life.
Yeah.
Can we not?
Okay, next is Manchester City against Arsenal. This game kicks off on Saturday at 5:40. It's not a bad Saturday's football.
Pretty
like,
decent.
You know, there's a real kind of bang of the Premier League trying to remind everybody the Premier League's the big dog.
Knock it!
Man City versus Arsenal. This one kicks off at 5:40 on Saturday evening. And what are the odds here, Emmett?
So Man City 1-2, the draw 7-2, and Arsenal 5-1. I think there's potentially pretty big injury trouble here for City, with obviously Aguero and Gabriel Jesus are both out, and which limits their striking options. And the two probably most important attacking players in Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne are both out, although Sterling's expected to play. I think if both those players are absent, Arsenal will definitely be a lot shorter than their current price of 5-1. It's early in the season, but I'd be pretty concerned how poor City have been so far. The being thrashed by Leicester was an anomaly, as we saw, given that they were outplayed by Leeds for long periods that last Premier League game. And it's early in the season, but I would question City spending 40 million on Nathan Aki, who I think is by no means a world-class centre-half, and not addressing their holding midfield area, where I think Rodri has yet to look up to the task of replacing Fernandinho.
I just think the whole no fans at games is produced a lot of weird stuff that has happened so far in the season, and it's in these matches where you have one team who is supposedly so clearly superior to the opposition that actually, and also looking back in that Arsenal-Liverpool game, Liverpool absolutely killed them, absolutely, it was one side, it was all one way traffic. I was like, hang on a second, what if Lacazette hadn't just kicked the ball straight at Alisson, who was in goals at that point?
No, but I wouldn't say Man City are vastly superior to Arsenal at the minute. I mean, if you're looking at the teams at the start of the season, last year they were vastly superior. This year they're not.
Supposedly, like on paper, they are. Now, how long is it going to take Thomas Partey to settle in? I don't know.
Well, you see, what's interesting about him, though, Ger, is that you're sort of seeing where Arteta wants, or what he wants to play, and how tactical aware he is. He spoke about Partey and why they bought him. He's a box-to-box midfielder. He can get up. He's good at getting forward, and he's good at getting back as well. He said he wants to play two formations, one in attack, one in defence, and Partey is going to be the key to that. That's what he wants him to do. He wants him to be both a box-to-box midfielder, a classic box-to-box midfielder.
Sounds a bit like Jason Malumbi, really. He should have just signed Malumbi.
In this game, watch out for Arsenal's signature play, though. They'll play it out from the back. It looks like Man City will be pressing them. It looks like they're going to give away the ball. They won't. And they'll play it up long, up the line to Saka or Aubameyang, whoever's playing there. Then they'll fire it across over to the other far end, and whoever's up front, Lacazette or Aubameyang again, will cut in. The left back will be going forward as a decoy run, and they'll score from that. I guarantee you Arsenal will score from that.
It doesn't seem to me like it's worth betting on Manchester City at the moment. They don't instill any confidence in me, and I just imagine how anxious I would feel watching Man City being a bit like Arsene Wenger's Arsenal at the end, when they were just trying to pass the ball into the net, but not actually having anybody who understands that getting the ball over the line is literally, it doesn't matter how beautiful it looks.
They're missing Aguero. They haven't signed a new player who can replace Aguero. Gabriel Jesus is not that. So that's really where they're missing, and they're not exciting to watch anymore, Jer. Do you think this Man City side are as exciting to watch as title-winning squad two years ago?
No, they clearly aren't. But actually, they're going to be involved in a lot of fairly good games. The Leicester game was a good game to watch. Like that, I actually think that they, especially when Kevin De Bruyne is playing, there's enough good quality football being played to make you sit down and go, yeah. And if Sterling's playing, I think Sterling's finishing has regressed. And I think that that's going to be an issue for them over the course of the rest of the season. So, again, a massive price about Arsenal, I think, 5-1 in what is a much closer game for me, given that these games behind closed doors are allowing the flaky teams not to feel the pressure of their own fans killing them.
Yeah, big one in this year. Watch out in case Kieran Tierney plays, because that will change how we view close contacts for Premier League footballers from now on.
Was that
explain that?
That's for your little programme on the telly where you're counting down. Just go and get a job, innit? Get a life.
He was a close contact with Stuart Armstrong during the international break. Arsenal are pushing hard to get him to be eligible to be playing in this game.
Different rules
and
in England.
And Ryan Christie, who was also a close contact for Celtic, he's out for the Celtic
the
game.
Money's the time.
If Kieran Tierney is allowed to play, then Ryan Christie will be allowed to play.
Okay. Let's move on. Newcastle against Manchester United. This is the one. This one kicks off at 8 o'clock on Saturday evening. You'll have had an absolute orgy of football all day long, and then you'll roll over and you'll go, I can't take any more. That's Newcastle versus Man United.
Well, people won't be able to watch this one, Jer. It's behind closed doors, behind the new pay-per-view Sky that they're starting to charge us for now. So unless you want to spend €15 to watch Newcastle beat Manchester United, then you're not going to be able to see this game.
Well, if Enda thinks Newcastle are going to beat Manchester United, what price is he getting?
So he's getting 15-4, so just over 7-2. The draw 3-1, and United are 4-6. I think it's going to be a pretty interesting team selection for United in both midfield and defence, given the disputed reports of bust up with Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba's lacklustre at best performance, I would say, against Spurs. I could see him being shifted from the starting team for Donny van der Beek. And then Solskjaer is in a very tough spot with United's options at centre-half, given Maguire's pitiful form, Eric Bailly looking like an accident waiting to happen.
Given and they're all shite, Emmett, so you can say
exactly,
it.
Basically, yeah, yeah. In summary, yeah. Yes. My guess is that they might go to back three here. It worked at times United last season with Luke Shaw as a third centre-half and Alex Telles and Aaron Wan-Bissaka as wing-backs.
It's pretty early on in the season for us to be talking about crisis, but we are, like, the first thing that we did on the show today was talk about how short Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is to be the next manager sacked. At the end of last season, when Bruno came in after that transfer window, and before the break, he was great, and then after the break, the team looked much better, and they roared into contention for like a team that we thought could actually, you know, well, it's only top four, but that might be able to, with a couple of good signings, maybe be able to catapult themselves into a team who were going to challenge Liverpool. And now look how ridiculous it even suggests. They think about the fact that they might be in contention. Now it's like, well, I mean, it's a long old season, but he wouldn't put relegation away from them.
Yeah, well, the problem for me, Jerry, is that they didn't sign Jack Grealish, they didn't sign James Maddison, they didn't sign Declan Rice, they didn't sign Upamecano, and all these lovely little players, and Sancho as well, that they were signing at the end of the season, didn't happen. And they're a disaster waiting to happen. Paul Pogba, again, flirting with Real Madrid, that sprung up again. Bruno Fernandes falling out with Solskjaer. Solskjaer losing the dressing room. It's all happening again for Man United. It's like deja vu. And they're terrible.
Lindelof,
Paul Pogba,
Fernandes.
Did you watch Paul Pogba for France?
No.
He was spraying balls for fun.
Was he?
He would clearly, like, it was like watching a different player to what was on the pitch against Spurs. He was amazing for France. He's just not doing it for United. He doesn't want to be there.
We went back and looked at the Lindelof-Bruno Fernandes route. So Bruno obviously has a little bit of this about him. Remember at the time, it was like, oh, this is exactly what Man United need. They need Bruno getting in there. Lindelof's not good enough anyway. And now it's like, oh, he might just be a troublemaker.
Nah. I'm still in camp Bruno here. I'm very much. He is vastly superior to most of those players in the squad.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean.
And he is telling them that they are shite. Deservedly so.
In your workplace, if there's like a big time Charlie wandering around telling you you're shite, and how would you call that?
Nathan Murphy does that to me every day. No, he doesn't actually. But Bruno Fernandes, you need him to be happy. And I think Donny van de Beek is if Pogba's not happy, get him out the door and get Donny van de Beek into the side, because he's already unsettled because he's not starting. And it's just turning into such a mess at United. I actually had a dream, I didn't get to tell you about this, that Solskjaer got sacked. That is how bad things have gotten at United right now. I had a dream that he got sacked and they got Pochettino in. So I'm hoping that's a dream and not a nightmare, and it happens very shortly.
I hope you got a tenner on that before he was down as short as 2-1. The odds on Manchester United score a penalty, Emmett?
Yeah, so we've a special of 9-2 on United to score a penalty to win the match. It's about the only thing United have been able to rely on this season. They've had two penalties in their first three games and led the league in penalties the last two seasons.
Yeah, there's like a special Manchester United rule where you get more penalties. Okay, so Newcastle 15-4 to win that game. Manchester United odds on favourites away from home 6-4. Back in odds on favourites away from home is the fastest way to the poorhouse. What's next? Where are we going next? Spurs versus West Ham. This one kicks off on Sunday at 4:30. Spurs versus West Ham is a game that I think has suddenly become interesting, because Spurs have suddenly become interesting. The issue at the start of the year was whether or not Jose Mourinho was past it as a manager. And it was like, okay, the significance of his end at Chelsea, where they fall out with the club doctor on the opening day of the season when they are the reigning league champions, and how quickly everything falls apart after that. And then his time at Manchester United, where none of the signings really worked. He was not able to buy successful defensive players. He wasn't able to make the team function as a team who could defend collectively and attack collectively. They were pretty boring to watch, even though they scored quite a lot of goals, and he was pointed to the success of Zlatan and the trophies. It was like, okay, it looks like he's completely washed up. Goes to Spurs, and all of a sudden the attacking talent that he has is fairly sensational, and they are all deciding that they're going to click and reach their peak collectively. So you've got Son, and you have a humble Harry Kane, it appears, who's working really hard, and still we've got Gareth Bale to add into all this. And look, one last spin of the merry-go-round with Jose Mourinho. I'm on board for this. And I think that they're actually going to be really good to watch over the course of the rest of the season. So that's why I'm actually interested genuinely in seeing what the hell's going on at Spurs. So Spurs versus West Ham kicks off 4:30 on Sunday. That's one of our live commentary games here on Off the Ball on News Talk. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr are calling that one for us. What are the odds here, Emmett?
So Tottenham 4-7, the draw 3-1, and West Ham 4-1. I think it's been very interesting how Harry Kane started the season so far. He's 6 assists in his first 4 matches, which is as many assists combined as he's had in his last 2 Premier League seasons. I think Kane's always been a superb passer. He's always a player of great skill, but he's previously been reluctant to come deeper, instead looking to play more as a box kind of centre forward. I feel this is how he needs to evolve as a player, as I think the ankle injuries he's had have taken away some of his athleticism, and he's no longer the player who used to lead the press for Mauricio Pochettino. However, as the opening weeks of the season have showed, he can be incredibly effective doing kind of both the job of a number 9 and a number 10. And we've actually a special on him to assist Son at 5-1 in this game, which has happened already on 3 occasions this season.
That's pretty good. I like that. On the Jose Mourinho front, I think you're spot on, Jared. Like, Jose Mourinho has already always sort of been a counter-attacking side or a counter-attacking manager, and he has one of the best counter-attacking forward lines in the Premier League right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they can sort out that defence, see if they can stop leaking goals, and they can do really well this year. If they don't do the usual Jose Mourinho act of falling out with every player and then just collapse it.
Look, that might happen. We already saw a little bit of it on the Amazon show with Danny Rose stuff, but look, you know, maybe that was the right player to pick and to get the weak one away from the herd. Right, Leeds versus Wolves is next. This one's Monday night, and what have you got for us?
Yeah, well, Leeds in this game are really interesting. I think anybody who's watched Leeds this year like have been entertained regardless of whether they actually like them or not. The whole United Leeds rivalry has instilled a little bit of hatred back for Leeds being in the Premier League, but they were unlucky not to beat Man City. Patrick Bamford has turned into, I don't know, Sergio Aguero at this stage. He can't stop scoring.
The answer to Ireland's problems.
Well, you know, another one gets away, Jared.
Well, he's not totally gone. We could offer him a field or a castle or something, couldn't we?
I don't know. But the best thing about watching Leeds is also you get a sideshow of watching Marcelo Bielsa on the sideline. Because if you ever watch him, he looks to be his pre-match routine or his during-match routine looks incredibly unhealthy because he just looks like he's about to have a heart attack at any moment in time. So he's interesting to watch. Wolves have been hit or miss. I know there's a lot of rumours flying about whether or not Wolves, all their Portuguese players, will be playing in this game or not. They were tested on Tuesday. 5 of them tested negative. They're being tested again this morning. So all 5 Portuguese internationals are due to play in this game as well. So they've been hit or miss. I do think this will be the game to watch overall in the weekend, and you know, Leeds are a good price to win this. I think Leeds will win this, and there will be plenty of goals.
Let's get the prices then, because presumably these prices have priced in the fact that all of Wolves' best players will be playing at the moment, Emmett?
Correct, yeah. I think if Leeds' price will definitely shorten, potentially on team news. At the moment, Leeds are 7-5, the draw is 9-4, and Wolves are 15-8. It's interesting that our ratings and match prices with Leeds and Wolves is pretty similar teams, which is surprising given Wolves weren't far off the top 4 last year and Leeds were in the Championship. But I think it's reflecting.
Hang on, go back to your match ratings. What does that mean?
Yeah, so just the how we would rate each team. So we'd obviously rate Liverpool number 1, Man City number 2. And like as in, we're basically just saying what level the teams are at.
Independent of the league table.
Exactly, yes. Exactly.
Do you publish this proprietorial information? Is that something we can all see?
Not quite, but you can kind of see it in our prices. Our prices for them to finish top 10, etc., would all be pretty similar for Leeds and Wolves. And just so like that, it just shows how good Leeds are.
Well, I was going to ask, does that mean you're in on Leeds or out on Wolves?
A bit of both, really. I think Wolves' summer transfer business is pretty questionable, namely spending 35 million on an 18-year-old Portuguese fullback who's played 12 league senior matches and replacing Matt Doherty with Nelson Semedo at double the price when Semedo's earned mixed reviews at best at Barcelona.
They do know the transfer market pretty well, so I'm not going to jump to any conclusions about what the super agent is actually doing there at the moment. So, very quickly, you like Leeds to win this game?
I like Leeds to win.
Irrespective of whether or not the Wolves lads are fit?
Yeah, definitely, because Nuno's already spoken about the frustration of all COVID dominating their build-up, and that's been one of their issues. It's been an issue this week as well, so I think Leeds will win this.
Okay, so there's 5 other games for us to get through. We're going to fly through these. Chelsea against Southampton is Saturday at 3:00. I think this is actually...
I never will.
I think this is actually a pretty interesting game.
Still don't
still loads of pressure on Frank Lampard. And I'm not really sure I agree with all of the stuff that's coming Frank Lampard's direction. I think that it's going to take a little bit of time for the six or seven superstars that he has bought to blend into a team. I think they clearly have defensive issues, but at least he recognised that and went out and bought players that might fix some of those issues. Whether or not he's bought the right players, you know, I actually don't think he has bought the right players, but at least he's trying, unlike some of the clubs, i.e. Manchester United, who have completely ignored the fact that they need certain players. Plus the attacking talent that he has got access to now, they might be 18 months away from being mature enough to be able to carry a team to title contention, notwithstanding the fact that maybe there's a window here while Alisson is out for Liverpool and while Man City are still shell-shocked from what happened in at the end of last season. I think there's a window for them.
So you're a Frank sympathizer then, essentially?
Yeah, I'm a fellow traveller.
The manager who has had everything handed to him on a silver platter, all of his career so far in management, you sympathise with him for his poor position that, you know, a Russian oligarch is just spending as much money just because he's friends with him. He wouldn't spend any money for Sarri, but just because Frank was on his yacht during the summer one year.
Couldn't spend any money for Sarri. There was a transfer embargo, you know. I mean, it was those poor people at UEFA have it in for him anyway. What are the odds on this one?
Yeah, so Chelsea are 1-2, draw 7-2, and Southampton are 5-1. Just interesting to me how Christian Pulisic goes. He should return to the starting lineup this weekend. And after lockdown, to me, he looked like a player who potentially could, I think, even go as far as compete for PFA Player of the Year this year. He scored 4 times in 7 league starts and was fouled a few times for penalties. But more than that, just he was beating defenders with incredible pace and skill. And in the FA Cup final, I think he was clearly the best player on the pitch before pulling a hamstring while the game was 1-1. And that and his injury could have turned the game in Arsenal's favour. I think if Pulisic takes a step forward, which would be reasonable to expect from a 22-year-old, I think I expect Chelsea's attack to be nearly unstoppable this year with Havertz, Werner, Ziyech, etc.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
It's decent, but I mean, if you say that, you know, Chelsea haven't hit the heights, if they don't hit the heights, is that Frank Lampard's fault?
Yeah, I think it depends. Is his job to hit the heights right now and win the league this season? I don't think it is. I think his job is to build a team who's capable of competing over the next number of seasons, and they've done that. They're one centre back short from being a team who could actually be the match of Liverpool in 2022, 2023, 2024. I think that's what they've done with this transfer policy. If they can keep those players. Right, is our 2 minutes up there? I didn't hear the end. It is. Yeah. Sorry, we're supposed to fly through these. Okay, Southampton at 5-1. I think is also a bit of a big price though, just for like given how shocking everything has been. I've done an accumulator with Newcastle, Arsenal, Southampton and Everton. What do you think it comes out at? Everton to beat Liverpool, Southampton to beat Chelsea, Arsenal to beat Man City and Newcastle to beat Man United. What do you think it comes out at, Enda?
It's high odds. Over 50?
665-1.
Stick a euro on it?
Stick a euro on it.
Not bad.
Right. No, that's you're just giving your money away there because I think you can get 3 of those up. This weekend. Right, so we've eaten into our time here for Sheffield United against Fulham. I've done you a favour, Enda, because you know nothing about these two teams. You don't care about them.
I don't need to say anything other than it's Chris Wilder, who's the biggest English bloke in the Premier League right now, versus Scotty Parker, who's the most modern English bloke in the Premier League right now. And they're both at the bottom of the table. Sheffield United can't score any goals. Fulham can't stop letting goals in. So this could be an interesting one. I mean, what it will be interesting in this is if Rian Brewster actually starts for Sheffield United, their record signing. Scored 10 goals in the Championship last year when he was on loan to Swansea. And he could get a goal here if he's actually starting in this game. But Sheffield United just don't look like the same team without Jack O'Connell playing centre back for them. He's out for the rest of the season, so they're going to have to learn to deal with him.
Ireland needs Sheffield United to start doing well. This one's Sunday, 12 o'clock. What are the odds on this one, Emmett?
Yeah, so currently Sheffield United are 11-10, draw 11-5, and Fulham are 11-4. I think it's a pretty possibly decent opportunity for Fulham here to get off the mark. John Egan's possibly going to have to self-isolate. Dave McGoldrick's out. John Fleck, who's a pretty useful player, is also out for Sheffield United. And I think Sheffield United desperately need, as Ed alluded to, Rian Brewster to succeed. They only scored 1 goal in 4 games. And I'd be a little worried if the Liverpool fans in my life don't rate Brewster that highly. And Liverpool have made very few mistakes in the transfer market in the last few years that I wouldn't be that confident in that Brewster will succeed, but Sheffield United certainly need him to.
Well, Liverpool fans never read anybody who leaves, do they? They also did insist on the buyback, so we'll see if they are telling the truth or not. Next is Crystal Palace against Brighton. Enda?
Yeah, this is Roy Hodgson again. It's sort of modern England versus old England, and when it comes to football, and I think Crystal Palace were unlucky again. I mean, they got hammered against Chelsea, but they were actually quite unlucky in that game. They were good in the first half, and I thought if they would have scored, it would have been a completely different outcome. Eze looks like a really good signing for them in midfield, and on the break against Brighton, who Tariq Lamptey might not be fit, they can really do damage to Brighton, because Brighton, while they play nice football, they can't finish their dinner. So, I mean, Aaron Connolly playing up front, they need to start scoring goals. And it's just one of those situations. It's almost like Ireland. They like to play football, and you have to give them some credit, but they're just not scoring goals. And that's going to be an issue. It was an issue last year. They just about survived in the last couple of weeks. So if they don't start scoring goals, they're going to struggle. But again, Crystal Palace don't score many goals either. So it's going to be a pretty boring game to watch here. And that's my prediction.
Okay. Well, Brighton were great to watch against Man United. What's the story here, Emmett?
Yeah, so Palace are 13-8, the draw 21-10, and Brighton 17-10. Just the last few years, we've kind of, one of my colleagues, William Fennec, has kind of calculated which players make the biggest difference to a team's match price. So that means if that player is absent, which is in, suddenly that team's odds will change significantly. And Wilfried Zaha has always been top of that list, because Wilfried Zaha is a Champions League standard player, and there's a huge drop off to his replacement, the likes of Jeffrey Schlupp and Andros Townsend. I think Palace as a club are well aware of his value and have priced him out of a move the last two summers, even though it's been fairly obvious he wants out. However, as Enda alluded to, I think with Eze and Batshuayi coming in, I think Palace probably have a bit more support from this year. I expect them probably to maybe closer to mid-table than in previous seasons.
Okay, so Palace, slight favourites for that game. And by the sounds of it, if Zaha's playing, are a reasonable bet. Leicester against Aston Villa. This game kicks off on Sunday at 7:15. That is the Villa hour. Sunday, late night kickoff. That's when Villa come alive. It turns out whatever the secret has been that they had been lacking up to this point, it was late night Sunday kickoff. They're going to score seven again against Leicester. It's in the books. You can take, I don't even know, I didn't check what the odds are on Villa scoring seven again.
Aston Villa going to win the
so
league, yeah.
Outrageous. Well, you know, if they continue at this pace, it's yes, they will. But Leicester have been able to do Villa, and generally Mark Albrighton has caused them lots of trouble, because obviously he was a player that they didn't rate and let go and didn't stick with. But I mean, as a Villa fan, you're just kind of going, something has to go wrong at some point soon, because this is not very normal. And yet they've bought really well. Again, it's like, you know, diagnose your problems, add a little bit of depth to the squad. Loads of the players that they bought last year, some of them weren't good enough. Some of them needed a little bit of time to bed in. And some of them were really good. And then there were also a few players got injured very early on and were out for the season. So you put that all together and they have a reasonable squad.
They've built well, Jared. I mean, Martinez, Ross Barkley and Watkins from the top scorer in the championship last year. Like, they have bought really well. Martinez is an underrated signing.
He's very good, yeah. Ross Barkley, I don't know. I mean, if Ross Barkley could shoot, it would have been 14-2 last week, because he was through one-on-one. But certainly immediately sparked up a good relationship with McGinn and
Trezeguet.
And they looked decent. With Jack Grealish was the name that I had suddenly had a brain fart about. What are the odds on this one, Emmett?
Yeah, so Leicester 19-20, close to even money. The draw 13-5, and Villa 11-4. Our view in the office would be that the 7-2 against Liverpool was far more about Villa being much improved than Liverpool's flaws. And we'd have them now as short as 9-1 to finish top six, compared to 50-1 at the start of the season.
Really?
Yeah, as in, like, I think, as you kind of mentioned, if you go out to the team, Villa, they've improved so much. I think, like, Ollie Watkins is a massive upgrade on some of the strikers Villa were lining out last season. I think even though he missed chances, that was as dangerous as I've seen Ross Barkley look in years. And it looks like Dean Smith will be playing him in his best position as an out-and-out attacking midfielder with not much defensive responsibility. Added to that, John McGinn looks fully recovered from his injury.
Yeah.
His injuries of last year and his dribbling creativity can take the pressure off Grealish. And Matty Cash and Martinez again look like decent additions. So, and added to that, through three games, they have the second lowest expected goals in the whole Premier League. But if you look at how bad their defence was last season, that's crazy. And I guess it speaks to how much they've improved.
Their centre-back partnership is really, really good. And if they can keep that together for a couple of seasons, that could be almost more important than keeping Grealish, because you can replace a little bit of what Grealish has. You probably can't replace him, but there will be a massive check written. I don't know if they'll get the full value that they actually managed to extract from the two centre-backs, although Damien Delaney is a big fan, certainly of Mings. Right, one last game for us. It's West Brom against Burnley. This is the Monday evening, 5:30 kickoff. Oh, who thought 5:30 kickoffs on a Monday was a good idea?
Well, who thought West Brom Burnley was a good idea, Jerry? as we mentioned before, West Brom in the relegation zone, they're probably going to stay.
Shea, Callum Robinson, come on.
I mean, I don't want to diss the Irish players here, but I mean, they're playing in the worst squads. Like, West Brom are probably the second worst squad in the Premier League this year. Burnley haven't improved. Sean Dyche looks really frustrated with that team.
There's no poetry in you, Endicott. I mean, imagine the struggle that West Brom are going to have to wrestle from every single training session, reeking every last drop of inspiration and glory from themselves. And you're like, this squad's rubbish. I'm not watching.
Well, I mean, are you going to sit down in 5:30 and watch Burnley West Brom?
I mean, maybe. Who knows? I mean, you don't know how miserable my life is, Enda.
I mean, level 5 could come, and I still probably wouldn't watch West Brom Burnley. It was one of those situations where we got out of lockdown, and we thought we'd watch every single football match on the TV, and it's just not going to happen. I'm not going to sit down and watch West Brom play Burnley. One thing about this West Brom team, though, is that Slaven Bilic is one of the best managers in the Premier League, and I would like to see him managing any other team than this West Brom team.
Okay, what are the odds?
Yeah, so West Brom 7-5, draw 9-4, Burnley 15-8. Yeah, you guys are reminding me of that Bill Shankly quote about not watching Everton if they're playing in his front garden. But I think this is a great opportunity for West Brom here. I think Burnley at a fairly low ebb, and I think it's hard to see other than a kind of fairly tight, low-scoring game. So definitely, if you're going to give one game a miss this weekend, it would be this one.
Okay, West Brom against Burnley kicks off at Monday at 5:30. Our live games this weekend, Spurs against West Ham at 4:30. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr on duty for that one. Palace against Brighton at 2:00 on Sunday. Stephen Doyle and Kenny Cunningham on duty for that. This week's Paddy Power Half Hour is in the books. And a reminder, we'll be here every Friday afternoon, bang on 1:30. Bang on, 1:30.
Before we finish up, Jared, do you want to hear how the viewers or the
the
off the ball Instagram followers have viewed these games? So we'll be doing a poll every Thursday ahead of the Paddy Power Half Hour. What game's coming up, and you'll get your chance to vote. We have calculated as of 10 a.m. this morning who the fans think are going to win. Liverpool edging it over Everton.
Much closer than you think, though.
Much closer, yeah. Man United just about edging Newcastle. Man City just about ahead of Arsenal on the poll. Spurs miles and miles ahead of West Ham. Leeds very strong favourites, according to the Off The Ball listeners. West Brom, Burnley very close, but Burnley edging it slightly. Sheffield United ahead of Fulham by almost more than double, actually. Crystal Palace just ahead of Brighton. And Leicester strong favourites against Aston Villa. So against where we actually think is going to go.
Yeah. All right. So we'll put those up on Instagram every week before the game. We'll run through them as a means of talking about the game, just to show how wrong some of the weight of the public is, and try and get some sense of where the value and the money is going for you. If you have any questions for us, you can WhatsApp us. 087-9180-180 is the number, or you can get us on Twitter as well. Emmett, good stuff. We'll see you next week. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads. Appreciate it.
See you next week, folks. Take care.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.